We read in Luke chapter 8. Can we turn back to Luke chapter 8 now and read again the first three verses there? Tonight, and I think next Sunday evening, I'm going to think particularly about women in the church. I'm just promising two Sundays that's all I'm going to do. If I get it wrong, it'll be the end of my ministry. So I better not promise too much. But we've had a lot of input about women in ministry. In fact, reading chapter 7 there reminded me that Joe Barnard preached on that a couple of weeks ago. And we've thought quite a bit about the woman at the resurrection as well. In the resurrection of Jesus, it was the woman who brought the news to the disciples, the male disciples, that Jesus was risen. We've thought about women in various other messages and contexts recently too. But I want to focus on that. It struck me, I thought, this is an important part of what the Bible teaches. I'll maybe say something about men as well in the future. I've got something planned in mind, but it's only an idea at the moment. Let's read Luke chapter 8 from verse 1. It says, after this, Jesus travelled about, so he's in Galilee, travelling about from one town and village to another, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of God. The 12 were with him, and also some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases, Mary, called Magdalene, from whom 7 demons had gone out, Joanna, the wife of Chuza, the manager of Herod's household, Susanna, and many others. These women were helping to support them out of their own means. So we're thinking about women, and of course, if we're thinking about women, what I'm saying is not only relevant to women here tonight, it's relevant to men as well. Because if it's relevant for women, it's relevant for men. Isn't that right, men? Yeah. There are more women in the church in Britain than there are men. Tear Fund recently surveyed UK churches, and they found that although there were plenty of churches with gender equality, or parity is maybe the word I should be using, where there was roughly the same number of men and women, overall in the church in Britain, on a given Sunday, if you went round the churches and counted up the number of males there compared to the number of females, you'd find 65% were women and the rest men. So that's roughly 2-to-1 women to men. So women do definitely deserve a special spot in the preaching from time to time, if for that reason only. It's not the same in other parts of the world, but it's true in Britain. There are many theories about why it's true. Why do more men than women in Britain attend church? Wonder what you think. Wonder what your ideas are. I'm sure we could all come up with reasons. Some of them would perhaps be humorous, some of them perhaps trivial. I sometimes wonder if men are much more peer conscious than women. I may be wrong about this, but I suspect that women may be more ready to identify with Jesus than men, not because Jesus appeals more to women, but because women perhaps aren't so bothered about what other women think in the way that men are bothered about what other men think. You can challenge me on that. I just wonder. In other words, women are more courageous than men. I wonder. It's really strange because the Jesus whom we worship is a man. And not only that, he is a very manly man. He's a man who showed himself to be exceedingly courageous, exceedingly an exceedingly good example of what a man ought to be, a perfect example. And he was, of course, before he did the 3 years of his ministry, he was a carpenter, which was a very tough and challenging trade to be in, and required a lot of physical strength because of everything was done by hand in those days. And yet somehow men don't get that and don't see that you can be really manly and be a Christian. And I'm going to maybe address that question. It's in my mind to do so, but not tonight or for a week or two. Anyway, one thing that we often overlook is that it's a fact that just as Jesus had 12 male disciples following him around, there were many women who also followed him around. The men accompanied him in his work, and so did the women. Women didn't just welcome Jesus into their homes and into the places he was ministering, but they also travelled with him. So in verse 1, we see Jesus travelled, it says, about from one town and village to another, and it says the 12 were with him, and also some women. And then it goes on to name 3 women particularly, Mary and Joanna and Susanna, and then it says, and many others. So there were a lot of women who were travelling with Jesus. And that's easy to overlook in the Gospels, but it's a fact. If you go to the end of Luke's Gospel and of Matthew and Mark's Gospel too, where you're at the cross, the story of the cross, you'll see that there are lots of women watching Jesus dying on the cross. And they are described as women who had followed him from Galilee. They followed him in Galilee, as that's what these verses say in Luke 8. But they followed him from Galilee as well. They were with him a great deal of the time. They're often invisible in the story. They pop up from time to time, but they're often not mentioned, and the focus tends to be on one or two of the disciples, the male disciples, Peter and John and one or two others. But they're there. And one example of how you know they're there is when, remember, Mary and Jesus' brothers came looking for Jesus. This is in Matthew 12, verse 49. They're in Galilee and they come looking for Jesus. And Jesus in a house surrounded by his disciples, it says, his disciples. And someone comes in and says, your mother and brother are outside looking for you. And Jesus turns to, it says, his disciples, and he says, who are my mother and my brothers? And then he points to the disciples, says, here are my mother and my brothers. And then he says, whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and my mother. And he's pointing, it tells us, at the disciples. Here they are. Here's my brother and my sister and my mother. For those who do the word of, who do the will of God are my mother and my sister and my brother. In other words, in front of him, it's not just men. It would be very strange for him to point to a bunch of men and say, here's my mother and here's my sister. It's men and women. They're disciples. The men and the women are there. Those called disciples are women as well as men. There's the 12 apostles, but then there are other men, and there are many women as well. And this is fascinating. And it's easy to overlook when you read the Gospels, but it really gives us an idea that when Jesus was traveling around, there was a considerable entourage, a considerable group of people with him, and that group must have presented many challenges as they went from town to town and village to village just to feed that group, just to accommodate them, to look after them, and to make practical arrangements for them. It was quite an undertaking. And that is the group that Jesus taught to pray for their daily bread, first of all, because that group didn't know where their daily bread was coming from as they moved about from town to town and village to village, that had to be arranged in every place. So, that's the first thing, just to highlight. In among those who followed Jesus, there were a lot of women. The second thing is that they were there to be with him, first and foremost. They just wanted to be with him. Now, the 12 disciples were chosen by Jesus, and they were chosen to be with him. Mark chapter 3, verse 14, the disciples were called that they might be with Jesus. That was the first reason, so that they would be with Jesus. And that is why they're with Jesus in chapter 8, verse 1 here. The 12 were with them, it says. They were with Jesus. But so are the women. The 12 were with them, and also some women, and there's the three named there, and many others, it says in verse 3. They're with Jesus. That's the first and foremost reason why they're there. Now, remember, Jesus chose the 12 men, but the woman chose Jesus. None of them were called to be with him. They themselves chose to be with him, and Jesus allowed them to be with him. They're under no obligation. They have volunteered to be with Jesus, and Jesus has permitted them to stay with him along with the disciples. So the primary reason why they're there, both the male and female disciples, is just for companionship. It's for the kind of friendship, the kind of emotional support, the kind of fellowship that they can give to one another and that they can give to Jesus in the exceedingly arduous and demanding work that he has been called to do. It's not that they're there to be productive. It's not just like they're there because of what they can do. Jesus doesn't think to himself, you can join us if you're useful. They're there, first of all, to be with him. Now think about that, because that's often not how we measure people. We tend to measure people in terms of what they can do, in terms of their ability to achieve things, their success rate. But in the church, first and foremost, people are there to be with Jesus. It's not about doing, it's about being. It's not about what you can offer, it's not about the work you can do, it's not about the skills you have, it's just about you and being in fellowship with and being in companionship with Jesus and with the other disciples. So you look at yourself and you say, well, have I understood this? And you look at your life, and if your life is really busy, and maybe even your life is busy doing Christian things some of the time, so busy that actually the time you have with Jesus each day is being squeezed out, then you really are missing the primary point of what being a disciple is. Being a disciple, first and foremost, is not about what you can do for Jesus, but it's about being with Jesus. These women were choosing, first and foremost, to be with Jesus. That was the first thing. And Jesus called the men as well to be with him. And so, you know, again, churches are often tempted to say, well, wouldn't it be great to have so-and-so in our church because they could do so much? But that's not what it's about. First and foremost, it's about the fact that God wants us to be with one another. He wants us to travel together. He wants us to relate. He wants us to build friendships. He wants us to have fellowship. He wants us to support one another. Relationship is more important than productivity in the Church of Christ. The women were called, the men were called to be with Jesus, and the woman chose also to be with Jesus. Next thing, though, is a more delicate question. Wouldn't this have created some problems, some temptations? It's a fact that in Jesus' day, most rabbis, they didn't associate with women at all. Most rabbis in Jesus' day, as a matter of fact, wouldn't even speak to women in public. And there were reasons for that. There were cultural reasons. There were reasons of the position of women in Jesus' culture and society, which wasn't what it should have been. But also, the rabbis wanted to avoid any kind of accusation, any kind of suspicion about themselves. But the thing is, Jesus wasn't like that. Jesus regularly speaks to women in public. Jesus regularly, like in chapter 7 at the end, is in very close contact with women. And he has the woman as well as the men in the group of his followers who are going about with him. Now the question is, how did Jesus maintain discipline? Like, it wasn't by doing what most of the rabbis did in his day, and that was by avoiding women and by teaching their disciples to do the same. Just stay away from women. The only woman that you should have anything to do with is your wife at home. Stay away from women. But Jesus doesn't do that. He doesn't teach that. How does Jesus therefore ensure that there is discipline among the group of the disciples following him around? And the answer is by his teaching and his example. Remember how Jesus teaches us in the Sermon on the Mount that even if we men were to look at a woman in a lustful way, even just to look and imagine something lustful in our hearts, that we will have committed adultery. So the standard that Jesus set for his followers was not just about outward behaviour. It was about their thoughts. And the way that Jesus therefore kept discipline was that the standard by which you had to live if you were following Jesus was that even in your thoughts, you thought pure things about the people that were around you, about your fellow disciples. The male disciples were to discipline their minds and their thoughts so that they didn't think anything inappropriate about the woman disciples who were with them. And the woman disciples were to do the same about the men. It wasn't about therefore avoiding each other's company. It was about self-discipline. Now, Jesus must have been criticized for this. He must have been criticized for having women in his group of followers. He was often criticized, we're told in the Gospels, as a friend of tax collectors and sinners. He must also have been criticized for being so close to women. But there's no criticism of that kind actually recorded in the Gospels. And I do wonder if perhaps the church writers, the Gospel writers, as they wrote up the Gospels, sensitively cast a veil over that criticism and simply recorded the standards by which the disciples were expected to conduct themselves, just to avoid any kind of hurt, because these disciples were still in the church when the Gospels were written, these men and women, and criticism like this could be very hurtful, very damaging. So it's probably the case that Jesus was criticized, but we're not actually told about it. The fact is that the disciples, male and female, they had to be disciplined. They had to be disciplined in their minds and in their hearts. Now it's the same today, because the church is a mixed group. It's nothing different. The church is a mixed group of men and women. We are in fellowship together, not just in a building like this, but often in small groups, often in doing things together, whether it's a holiday club or whether it's meeting for coffee, or whether it's helping in a Sunday school or whatever it is, we're working, men and women, alongside each other constantly. And we have to be careful. We have to be careful about how we think about one another. We have to be absolutely careful to safeguard our minds from scandal. And if our minds are pure, then our words and our actions will also be pure, and we will be free from trouble. And you and I, we all need to be careful about this. We do. And in the kind of climate that we live in, where there's always people rooting around for scandal or to make up scandal in the church, we absolutely need to be circumspect and careful. So we want to have the warmest fellowship between men and women, but we're absolutely careful to keep our thoughts pure about one another. So that was true of Jesus' disciples, the men and the women. Let's think about some of these women now. These women were women whom Jesus had healed. In verse 2 it says, some women who had been cured of evil spirits and diseases. Now Jesus, we're told again in the Gospels, he met the needs of anyone who presented themselves to him with an ailment. And he did that for men and he did it for women. He didn't make any difference. You wouldn't expect him to have, but he didn't. So there are plenty of stories of women being healed, like the Canaanite woman, her daughter being delivered, Peter's mother-in-law being healed, the widow of Nain's son being raised up, the woman who was bent double in Luke chapter 13, the woman with the issue of blood, all these kinds of examples. And here are three women we are told Jesus had delivered from sickness, from disease, from evil spirits. Let's have a look at them. Here's Mary Magdalene. Now, we know virtually nothing about Mary Magdalene. We don't know how old she was, for example. I suspect Mary Magdalene was probably an older woman, if not an old woman, because I think a young woman in a group like this might indeed have presented temptations and have attracted criticism. Now, I just did a very interesting little thing when I was preparing this. I went on to Google Images and I thought, let me just Google Mary Magdalene in art. Okay, so Mary Magdalene is represented in art throughout the centuries. So I had a wee look at that and a pile of images come up. All of, you know, some of the classic paintings of the Renaissance and other periods. And Mary Magdalene is every time a young woman, and a very, very attractive young woman. Well, there's absolutely nothing to say that that's true. In fact, I think it's highly unlikely. And actually, in my mind, it shows the danger that the artists were kind of using their own imaginations rather than the Bible information to portray something they wanted. And in fact, I think Mary probably was an older woman. A younger woman might have presented temptation. That's all we know. We don't know anything then about her age. We know she was from Magdala, because that's what Magdalene means. Magdala on the west shore of the Sea of Galilee, a little village there. But we don't know anything about Magdala. Magadha was the name of the place. We know that she met Jesus at a time when she was in great need, because it tells us here, and only here, that Jesus had cast seven demons out of her. So we know that she was a greatly afflicted woman. She had a great deal of trouble in her life. But we don't know what it was that led her to be afflicted in this way with seven demons. And we don't know the nature of her lifestyle or of her sufferings before. We don't know anything. We can imagine the relief that Mary felt when she was delivered from these seven spirits and the affliction that they caused her, and when she got this new life free of spiritual oppression. Thereafter, we're told that Mary spent a lot of time in the company of Jesus and the disciples. She is mentioned more in the Gospels than any other woman apart from Jesus' mother, Mary. So she travels with Jesus here. Travels with the 12. She's at the cross. She's at the burial of Jesus. And she's the first witness of Jesus at the resurrection. And who can forget the joy of Mary when she thinks that the man in front of her is the gardener who has taken the body of Jesus, her Lord, away. And then the gardener speaks her name, Mary, and she realizes it's the risen Jesus. One of the most beautiful and poignant passages in the whole scripture. But whatever we can say then about Mary, and it's very little, we can see that she was devoted to Jesus. She was devoted to the Jesus who had saved her. Wherever Jesus was where she wanted to be. What about you? And what about me? Not a beautiful way to be. Wherever Jesus was where she wanted to be. That is surely the way it should be with every Christian. Every Christian woman and every Christian man. Wherever Jesus is, that's where we want to be. That was Mary. There's a couple of other women mentioned. Joanna. Joanna is mentioned only here and at the empty tomb in Luke chapter 24 and verse 10. Just mentioned twice. And we're told here that she's the wife of Cusa, the manager of Herod's household. So she's the wife of a very powerful husband, a very wealthy husband. And you just wonder, well, how did her husband let her go away and live with the disciples and with Jesus and travel with them and travel down to from Galilee to Judea and so on? Was he a secret disciple of Jesus himself? The fact that he's named is interesting. Often people are named in the Gospels because they were part of the early church. Was he just happy that his wife had been healed by Jesus and happy to let her express her gratitude to Jesus for being healed by her supporting Jesus? Well, we don't know. We don't know. Lots of questions there. And then this woman, Susanna, who's mentioned, this is the only time she's mentioned. We don't know anything about her except her name. And that, of course, she also wanted to be with Jesus. And that's really it. That's her accolade, if you like. This woman, Susanna, and Joanna as well. They were simply women who wanted to be with Jesus. That's how they're known. How are we known? How are we known in our community? Are we known like these women? People who want to be with Jesus. Well, finally, let me just say tonight that the attitude of these women, again, is important. Because I think it's easy for us to imagine that the women are trying to in some way repay Jesus, repay the debt that they owed him. They did owe him a debt. Jesus had healed them. And there's always a temptation for any of us to try and repay a debt. When we feel that we have had some special favour shown us, we want to repay in some way. Well, sometimes that's appropriate, but not with Jesus. Jesus wouldn't allow them to be with him if that's what they were wanting to do, to try and repay him for healing them. Because we can't ever repay Jesus anyway. At the end of chapter 7 of Luke's Gospel, there's this woman who anoints Jesus, and Jesus says she's forgiven. And in verses 46 and 47, he says that she loves much because she knows she's been forgiven much. She's not trying to repay Jesus for the forgiveness she's received, but she loves Jesus and she's expressing that love by anointing him. That's the place we want to get to, as these women got to, with Jesus. We're not trying to repay him. We're not trying to pay him back for anything he's done for us, for any good thing, for any blessing. We can't repay Jesus. But instead, we see him as someone we love. And because we love him, we want to serve him. We want to be with him. We want, like these women, to travel with him, like the men too, to travel with him and to love him day by day. We can't repay, but we can love. And we can love Jesus by loving those Jesus has given us around us, by loving our brothers and sisters in the church, by loving our parents and loving our children, by loving our husbands and our wives, by being great neighbours, great friends to our friends. Whatever you did for the least of these brothers of mine, Jesus said, you did it for me. So, like these women, let's seek to travel with Jesus in order that we may express love to Jesus, in order that we may be with him, and in order that we may serve him. That is a great goal for our lives. God help us to fulfill it.